free arrangement by the Thomas M. Steichner Funeral Home in Chicora. Go ahead, give them a call. Do it today while you're thinking about it.
I got some clouds today. A high today, just about 69. No rain showers tonight. Mostly cloudy, low down to 47. They actually come in tomorrow night, and then they're going to stick with us all the way through Halloween afternoon, Halloween evening, even into Friday morning, at least in the morning before 8 a.m. on Friday. So let's talk temperatures. A high again, 69 today. Tomorrow, 68, pretty much the same on Thursday with a Thursday night low down to 37. Then on Friday, we only reach to about 46, and we'll stick at that temperature on Saturday and again on Sunday. So that's an average temperature as we go throughout the weekend. 66 right now in downtown Butler. And, of course, we will take another look at your weather forecast as we go throughout the afternoon. Your news time is just about 12:31. I'm Tracy Morgan in the Next Tier Bank studios. Next Tier Bank, your hometown community bank. Dave Malarkey's up next with It's Your Turn. Thanks for joining us, and have a great day.
And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey. 724-283-2525. It's Butler County's only live call-in talk show. It's your turn on 680 AM WISR and worldwide on the internet at WISR680.com. It's your turn, 724-283-2525. And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey.
Afternoon once again, everyone. Welcome. Nice to have you with us on the Tuesday edition of It's Your Turn. You would be forgiven if you just marvel a little bit about the weather today, because it is glorious out there. Now, the wind has kicked up a little bit earlier this morning. I actually went out for a couple of minutes out onto the front porch here at our radio station, I guess it was around 10 o'clock, 10:30 this morning, just to revel in the sunshine and the warmth. As you just heard Tracy say, we're expecting to be close to 70 this afternoon. This may be the warmest day we have until May of next year. It's very possible. Temperatures up near 70, that's pretty rarefied air for late October. We're already up to around 68 or 69, depending on your location. And there's still a lot of sunshine now. The clouds will be increasing as we get a little bit deeper into the afternoon. And as you heard Tracy say, slight chance of some rain tomorrow. There's going to be a lot of rain on Thursday. Unfortunately, just in time for all of the young trick-or-treaters who will be out and about on Thursday night. Well, we'll see what happens, but right now it looks like there's going to be a good bit of wet stuff on Halloween. Yesterday, just glorious in the afternoon. It took a long time to get rid of the fog yesterday. In fact, even up close to noontime before we lost all the fog. But boy, after that, it was just gorgeous. That clear blue sky that you only see in September and October, and it just lit up the foliage. It was just glorious. Nice. Enjoy. We don't have many of these days left. It's supposed to get much, much chillier. Once we get past the rainy Thursday, temperatures only in the 40s for pretty much the next couple of weeks, at least after that, taking us into to mid-November. 283-2525 is the number. We have a few minutes for open talk today before we chat with our first guest.
Hello?
Hello, caller. This is Dave. Are you calling for It's Your Turn?
Yes.
Go right ahead. You're on the air.
Okay. Yeah, you talking about the weather?
Yes.
I had to flip my AC back on in the car. Sun's shining so bright.
Yeah, if your car's been sitting out in the sun, it gets pretty hot.
My call is, the write-in campaign for judgeship between Jennifer and Wink.
Yes. Uh-huh.
I'd really like to see Jennifer in office there. It was a pretty close primary. I think she's got a good chance of actually winning this election next week.
Well, it's 1 week from today. Yeah. Next Tuesday is Election Day. It sounds like you're calling from, I don't know, Croatia or somewhere. We've got a really horrible connection, but I think we were able to make out what you were saying.
Butler, PA.
It must be in a bad cell or something because very difficult to understand you there. No, that's okay. Thanks. We were able to understand what you were saying. Really bad connection. It's amazing how cell phones, for all the great technology, you get a call once in a while that's almost undecipherable. Sometimes it's the person not using the cell phone correctly. You know, where they get it too far away from their mouth, or they're using a Bluetooth or something like that. Or worst of all, speakerphone. I hate them. You never get good quality from a speakerphone, whether it's, you know, you're sitting at a desk somewhere or, you know, you're using a speakerphone on your cell phone. It just doesn't work, folks. I know it might be more convenient, but it just doesn't work very well. Okay, we're going to be talking in just a couple of minutes about social drinking on the first portion of the program today. A little bit later, Matthew Kramer will be joining us. Matthew Kramer, the musical director and conductor of the Butler County Symphony Orchestra. He's in town. They're getting ready for another concert this weekend. And he'll be here in the studio, so it'll be nice to talk with Matthew Kramer. But that's coming up a little bit later on the program. Social drinking will be the topic that we discuss with our first guest. She is Lisa Boucher. Are you a social drinker? I guess kind of depends on how you describe that, huh? Yeah. I would say I fall into that category. I like a nice, tall, cold Guinness every once in a while. But, you know, other than that, that's about it. Would that be categorized as social drinking? I guess so. And not all the time. Certainly not every day. Sometimes not every week, you know. But Lisa Boucher says, be careful about social drinking. She has battled alcoholism, and she'll talk to us about it, the health risks and so on and so forth. Lisa Boucher. Coming up later this week on the program, you realize how close we are to November. Wow. Wow. We're going to be talking tomorrow with Matthew McCune from Butler Downtown. They're gearing up for the holiday season just around the corner. We are very close. In fact, we're getting close to the deadline to enter floats, aren't we? In the spirit of Christmas Parade, which our Butler radio station group has sponsored now for quite a few years. So let's remind you of that. If your group or organization wants to enter a float in the parade, it's October 31st, right? Day after tomorrow. Now, you don't have to have your float done, obviously, but you need to get your entry in. So do that. Check online on our website. Have all the details there. You know, whether it's your group, your organization, your church group, your scout troop, your neighborhood group. It's a lot of fun to get together and come up with an idea. The theme is Storybook Christmas, so that opens up a lot of possibilities for a float. And, you know, it doesn't have to be the most elaborate thing in the world. Sometimes the simple ones, well done, are winners. And don't forget, it's a nighttime parade now and has been for several years. So the floats have to be lit one way or another, and it creates quite a sight as the long line of floats moves down Main Street in the city of Butler for the Spirit of Christmas Parade. It's Saturday evening, the Saturday after Thanksgiving. It's a wonderful time. wonderful time. I look forward to it every year. So if you're thinking about that, if your group or organization wants to get involved, you must have your float entry in by the end of this month, October 31st, couple of days down the road. You can get details online at our website, butlerradio.com. Okay, let's take a break here. If I can stop staring out the window at that still beautiful blue sky and sunshine. Wow, that's nice. That's nice. And when you know what's just around the corner, you really appreciate a stretch of weather like this. We were up in the 60s yesterday. We're already close to 70 degrees right now. Ginger peachy keen. A break, and then we're going to be talking about social drinking with Lisa Boucher here on the Tuesday edition of It's Your Turn on WISR. We'll be right back.
Shopping for a mortgage? Don't just compare the mortgage rates. At Armco Credit Union, they'll not only offer a competitive rate, but they may be able to save you money with lower fees and closing costs. Whether you're looking for a VA, FHA, or conventional loan, they're here to help guide you through the mortgage process so you can make the best decision for your situation. Call today, 724-284-2020. Don't have time to call or visit? Apply for a mortgage online at armcocu.com. Like them on Facebook and be the first to learn about their promotions or events. Armco Credit Union is an equal housing opportunity and is federally insured by NCUA.
The Jones Turkey Farm in Cabot has delicious, all-natural, free-roaming turkeys and chickens to make your Thanksgiving meal special this year. Their birds are handled with extreme care and are preservative and additive-free. Buy your turkey frozen today or get it fresh right before the big holiday meal. For the tastiest turkeys and chickens in Western PA, call the Jones Turkey Farm, 724-352-2450, or visit jonesturkeyfarm.com. The Jones Turkey Farm in Cabot, quite simply the best.
Coming up on It's Your Turn on this segment, listeners, my name is Dave Malarkey. We're going to be talking about social drinking today. Social drinking. And to do that, we're going to be talking with the author of a book entitled Raising the Bottom, Making Mindful Choices in a Drinking Culture. We say hello to Lisa Boucher, who joins us by telephone. Hi, Lisa. Nice to have you with us today.
Thank you. Thank you, Dave, for having me.
Well, we certainly live in a boozy culture these days, and the idea of women and wine has become pretty well entrenched. But it can easily lead to a problem as well. As a matter of fact, you experienced a problem, right? You've been in recovery for some time.
Yes, that is correct. I've been sober for 30 years, and I got sober when most people would still say, oh, I'm a social drinker. So, I mean, even my husband was saying, no, you're not an alcoholic. But I knew enough about what the disease can look like in the early stages that I decided to just nip it in the bud. So that is rather my message is, you know, let's just go to Halloween. That's the holiday coming up, Dave. So I know when my sons, I raised twins, boys, and when they were young, trick-or-treating was really more about the parents going house to house and having cocktails than it was the kids getting candy. So these are the kind of things that I point out and say, why are we doing this? Why are we role modeling this sort of boozy culture when we have so many even children that are falling into the throes of addiction at an early age? And this is all that's role modeled to them, and this is all that our culture is about. And many of these women and men, these young parents, are already struggling with addiction, and just because they're functional doesn't mean they're not falling apart internally, that they're not having relationship consequences, job consequences. Maybe some already have DUIs. So these kind of things are going on, but we continue to people that drink daily, everyone says, oh, I'm a social drinker. And I'm just saying, well, that's really not that social. That's borderline alcohol abuse or alcohol misuse at the very least. I know for myself, I'm an alcoholic, and I did not drink every day. So I think there's a lot of misconception around what alcoholism can look like.
You know, it's kind of glamorized, too, in our pop culture these days, much in the way that cigarette smoking was decades ago. If you ever see any of the movies from the 1940s and 1950s on Turner Classic Movies, it's just incredible the amount of smoking that went on. And we see this today with drinking, and I don't mean to generalize, but oftentimes it's women and wine. You see this. Is this what you mean, Lisa, when you say that alcoholism has become normalized in today's society?
Yeah, in a lot of ways. So I can give you several examples. So let's start with all of the microbreweries. I was doing another radio show out of D.C., and the host was talking about her and her husband went to a brewery, and she said that the number of toddlers running around and baby strollers, she said it was shocking and very uncomfortable. So now all of a sudden we're marrying child-rearing and alcohol, which it doesn't make sense on any kind of level. How as a culture have we justified this nonsense? Because it is nonsense. So parents are drinking liberally, then they're packing up their babies and toddlers in their cars and driving home. That's obscene. Why are we doing this? I mean, we have lowered the bar as a culture. The women in wine, the women in yoga, the museum and sip and paint and on and on and on. And even men. I mean, this is not, they're really heavily, the big alcohol is heavily marketing to the tune of over $2 billion a year in the United States alone. Much of that, though, is targeted toward women because women are the number one wine buyers. They are drinking younger, they are making more money, they are better educated, and of course, none of that has gone unnoticed by big alcohol, so they're targeting women. And we're seeing families, I'm also a registered nurse, so I've been working in emergency rooms and psych wards for 25 years, and I'm seeing the trend of, and also in recovery rooms, of younger and younger women that their livers are failing them in their late 30s, 40s. They're yellow, they're jaundiced, they're dying. So this is serious stuff, and we joke a lot about it, and I guess for the person who doesn't have an addiction problem, great, but more and more people are falling into addiction. I mean, they say generally, the statistics is 10% of the population. So for a country of 320 million people, that's 32 million people with addiction issues. And I would say that is a very conservative, because that is not catching the people like I was, that I never went to rehab, I never went to the doctor, I just knew what addiction looked like because I had an alcoholic mom who did go through all the drama that you can imagine, and that's what I talk about in my book. I mean, some of it is comical, but some of it is not. And so I targeted women that, for my story and in my book, that have, these are doctors and nurses and mothers that did not hit these devastating low bottoms. Their lives were just not working. They were getting, you know, multiple marriages, depression, anxiety, all of these, what they say are mental health symptoms, are often nothing more than someone who is misusing alcohol and or prescription drugs. So this is where we should look first if we're really wanting to feel better and change our lives, instead of and ask why are we self-medicating, because it goes back to emotions in all cases.
We hear a lot and have about peer pressure in teens, forcing them through peer pressure into behaviors that they might not ordinarily partake of. Is there adult peer pressure to drink, Lisa?
Okay, there absolutely is. Just what I was alluding to earlier about these moms. Get on Facebook and check out. There are a whole posse of women that millions, like moms who drink and swear, or moms who love wine, or whatever, any kind of name with alcohol. Millions of people are flocking to these sites. So here again, we've got women that now think it's really cool to drink on play dates. But even if you're a mom, I've had women tell me that they're afraid to stand up to this because they will be kicked out of their friend group. And it's just stunning to me. It's like, really, how old are you? So we've got women in their 20s and 30s that are afraid to do the next right thing and make good choices for their families because their friends will not talk to them or ostracize them. And I say shame on the woman who can't stand up, and shame on these women who are really nothing more than glorified teenagers emotionally, and this is alcoholism, because you stop growing emotionally when you pick up a drink. So let's just logically look about it. And this is proven. This is how addiction works. So you start drinking in high school, 15, 16, maybe even younger. And by the time you're 29 or 30, you've not really grown up emotionally. Chronologically, you're old enough to be a parent, but emotionally, you're still a child. And this explains why parents act so crazy sometimes. It explains why there's this adult peer pressure. And, you know, if a diabetic refuses a cupcake, nobody questions them. Nobody peppers them with whys. But we do this with alcohol, and I've been, you know, like I said, I'm around alcohol a lot. My husband still drinks. We do a lot of things where alcohol is involved. And early in my recovery, it was extremely uncomfortable because I didn't have the skills or the confidence to deal with it in the way that I can handle it now. But when I would refuse a cocktail, you get the questions, why aren't you drinking, blah, blah, blah. I mean, really, it's no one's business. And as adults, no is a complete sentence. We should be allowed to say, no, thank you, I prefer not to drink, without having peer pressure.
Mm-hmm. We're talking with Lisa Boucher, author of a book entitled Raising the Bottom, Making Mindful Choices in a Drinking Culture. What's the difference, Lisa, between a high bottom and a low bottom?
So a low bottom is what everybody thinks of when they think of alcoholism. They think of the person who maybe is homeless on the street, the people on the 6 o'clock news who have crashed their cars through buildings and they're on their 13th DUI, or they end up in the back of a cruiser, a cop car cruiser. And this is not, that's a low bottom. This is where the face of addiction that we get bombarded with. And then, of course, the opioid epidemic has its share of horror stories. And so when the vast majority think of addiction, this is what they think of. I am focused on the high-bottom drunks who are like myself. And what that looks like is the physician who goes to work every day and is doing surgery and coming home and drinking, opening wine or having cocktails and drinking the rest of the night until they pass out, only to wake up and do it all over again. So I have a story like that in my book of a surgeon who did just that. It is the mom or dad who may be an executive, and they go to work, and they're doing boozy lunches, and they're doing booze after work, and that's just part of their culture, but the alcohol is front and center every single day. The high-bottom person who they're just so depressed and anxious, and they can't really function that well, but just because they go to work every day. Or maybe it's the mom who is a stay-at-home mom and she starts drinking at noon. Or maybe she white knuckles it to 5 o'clock just so it's acceptable and then starts drinking and drinks the rest of the night. And when you're like that, you're not really present. And the women, especially the moms who then do get sober, the remorse and regret and the mom guilt is devastating to them when they realize their kids have a lot of problems. I know there was one woman in my book, she too was a physician, and she said when she got sober, her 15-year-old daughter was curled up in a ball on the couch crying over some boyfriend. And she said, I didn't even know how to console her. I didn't even know that she had a boyfriend, because this was a mom who thought she was a great parent because her kids went to a good school. They lived in a great neighborhood. But mom was all about, you know, she got them to the dentist and showed up at their soccer with her travel mug of wine. But she was never really present. And so I have two letters from doctors' daughters in my book of how they felt about their boozy moms who seemed to have it all together from what society judges. But inside, these women were very self-absorbed, not present, and did a lot of damage, even though nothing really outwardly fell apart for them.
We've had a great deal of focus, especially over the last decade, on opioids. In fact, more people die from alcohol abuse than opioids, right?
Yeah, that's true. 88,000 people died from alcohol last year and 72,000 from opioids. And the vast majority of people that end up in opioid addiction started with alcohol. So this truly is where much of addiction starts. And nobody wants to talk about it because it is widely acceptable. And here again is the money-making aspect of alcohol. But it is the most widely abused drug. It devastates lives. I mean, all you have to do is go into an emergency room. And I really started to pay attention after a few years when I realized 85%, this is just my hypothesis kind of guess, is of what was rolling through the doors was alcohol and or drug related. So you've got liver disease, heart disease, kidney disease from high blood pressure. People don't want to equate that, but high blood pressure, the silent killer. Well, how many of those people are drinking heavily? And you can often point these people out in public. Just start paying attention to those really red noses, the red faces. I mean, I know if you watch on TV, you just can see some of the politicians when they get up, their red faces are like, clearly these people have drinking problems. And they're not addressed because they appear to be functioning. So, I mean, I just got a new car. This is crazy, but I was leaving. We were leaving the dealership, and the salesman started to talk to my husband and I about his three DUIs. And so I said to him, I said, well, you know, I'm sober, and I know a little bit about this. And we ended up having some really interesting conversations, and clearly this is a man who wants help. But he said he was scared. He's scared of what his life might look like if he's not going out and getting drunk every Wednesday, Friday, and Saturday. So he says, well, I don't drink every day. And I said, well, you don't have to drink every day to have a problem. But he said every time he goes out, he can't stop. He has spent a little brief stints in jail for multiple DUIs, et cetera. This is a functioning alcoholic. He's the number one salesman. Because he's a gregarious, you know, extremely likable guy. But he's got a problem. And I was just really trying to encourage him. In fact, he wanted a copy of my book, and he bought one. And I hope it helps him to see that there's an amazing life on the other side of thinking you're never going to have any fun, because that's what alcoholics always think. Oh, my God, if I quit drinking, I'll never have any fun. And it's the big lie. That is the big lie that we all tell ourselves.
Everyone.
Until we stop and realize, wow.
We hear occasionally a story, and it was just one a few weeks back, and it's, fortunately it doesn't happen very often, but an airline captain who was getting ready to get on an aircraft and fly people somewhere, it was over in Europe somewhere, and the guy was inebriated, you know.
I saw that. I think it was in Scotland, and I used to be a flight attendant. So, you know, I did, after I got sober, and I thought back to, I can't say that I ever flew with a pilot who was absolutely drunk, but I will tell you, we all hit the bars after our flight came in. And it, some of the flights, they were closed. You have to have at least 8 hours. At least this was back in the 80s. You had to have 8 hours between when you were going to fly. So, but we were drinking heavily. And who knew what those pilots were doing when they got back to their room? I know I was stealing minis off the bar cars back in the day. They weren't locked up like they are now quite as heavily. So were they flying maybe not drunk but hungover? And, you know, I mean, it... There are no demographics for this stuff. So people, you can be highly educated. You can be a doctor, a lawyer, an airplane pilot. Name a field. Name anything. And there's alcoholics in there. So these are the kind of things that we need to smash the stereotype of it's only people that are uneducated or only people who aren't that smart, et cetera, et cetera. It's just not true. There are no demographics. Alcoholism is rampant in our society. Alcohol abuse is rampant, and the devastation and the cost of billions, billions and billions of dollars in lost productivity, even to corporate America, but yet their functions all push the booze. I mean, it makes no sense.
We're talking, we have been talking with Lisa Boucher, if you're looking for her online. The last name is spelled B-O-U-C-H-E. B-O-U-C-H-E-R. Lisa Boucher, author of Raising the Bottom, Making Mindful Choices in a Drinking Culture. Lisa, nice to have you with us today. Nice to talk to you.
Thank you. Thank you, Dave. I appreciate it. Sure. Take care.
Sure. So long now.
Concordia Visiting Nurses Elder Pages Pittsburgh helps you to stay independent by taking charge of your life in order to preserve your physical abilities. Is it Alzheimer's or the normal forgetfulness of aging? Elder Pages Pittsburgh can provide answers. Discover tips for living well with CHF, COPD, and diabetes. Visit elderpagespittsburgh.com by Concordia Visiting Nurses.
Auto accidents can be a terrifying experience. Injuries can occur at an impact of just 2 to 3 miles per hour. If you've had an accident, it's time to visit Applewood Chiropractic Health and Fitness Center. Doctors Lucas and Detweiler specialize in treating accident-related injuries from whiplash, soft tissue pain, and headaches to shoulder and arm pain, reduced range of motion, and disc damage. Let the professionals at Applewood Chiropractic provide you with the necessary benefits to aid you in your healing process. Applewood Chiropractic Health and Fitness Center, Thorn Apple Drive in Butler. Visit applewoodchiro.com.
Welcome back, good friends. We're going to shift gears after talking about social drinking. Some good ideas there from Lisa Boucher. We welcome here in the studio the music director and conductor of the Butler County Symphony Orchestra, Matthew Kramer, is here. Matthew, good to see you.
Great to see you too, Dave.
Yeah. A lot of folks might realize that there's another concert of the Butler Symphony coming up this weekend, but then they're looking at the calendar and saying, it's Tuesday. What's Matthew Kramer doing here in town already? It's a special week for you. Every year you do this, right?
This is our sixth year of bringing music into the schools within the county. Over these past 6 years, we've seen so many students, thousands of students, really. And I think just to be able to introduce many of them to classical music and the instruments of the orchestra is a real blessing for us. We just get to look out at their smiling faces. And this year is especially meaningful because we're bringing a real masterpiece up into the school, Peter and the Wolf, which Prokofiev's classic is probably responsible as much as any piece of classical music for introducing people to the sounds of the orchestra.
Mm-hmm. I want to talk about that program in a little bit more detail, but just in case, and we have a lot of people that listen to the radio this hour in the car, so in case somebody's, you know, pulling into the supermarket or pulling into the mall, whatever, let's just briefly tell the folks what's coming up in concert number two of the symphony season already, and it is, in fact, this weekend, right?
That's right. It does feel like just a couple days ago that I was here to open this season, but we talk about that a lot. And there's some actual similarities between the first piece, the first concert of the season, which was a strictly classical concert, and this concert as well. We always try to include one family-oriented program in the season, something that's perfectly appropriate for the young children to come to, something that would be accessible to people probably who are a little uncomfortable or unfamiliar with classical music. And you know, we opened the season with a program called Folklore and Fairy Tales, which had Tchaikovsky's beautiful Sleeping Beauty Suite on it, which featured the Garland Waltz, which Walt Disney used so effectively in Sleeping Beauty. And now we turn our attention this weekend to a full-blown Walt Disney program. It's one that I've done on numerous occasions. We actually did do this in Butler about 7 years ago when I was first taking over as music director, and Disney has revamped this program several times, and it is really something to behold. It is all of the scores from these very memorable movies, generational movies, really, the ones as early as Snow White and Cinderella, through Beauty and the Beast, The Lion King, up until modern classics like Frozen. So there is live animation that's on screens that surround the orchestra, so it really is kind of a multidimensional program.
And young people will love this. Even little ones are going to love this. Frozen and The Little Mermaid, they know these shows.
They absolutely do. My wife raves about this program. She's not a classical musician, but she loves this one in particular because it really does take all of us back to our childhood in many respects. I grew up with some of these films. The Little Mermaid, for example, is one that my wife was particularly attached to. But The Lion King and Beauty and the Beast, And I think so for people with young children, this is, again, that kind of entry level program for the orchestra that, you know, there's going to be rustling and moving around. Each selection is only about 8 minutes in duration. And again, there's something for them to watch during this program. We'd love to see kids if they come dressed up in costume. Frankly, I would like to see some adults dressed up in their costumes as well as we come just past Halloween here. It is a lot of fun because we keep saying that the orchestra is capable of playing anything, and it is. We can change gears from playing Rachmaninoff Piano Concerto and Prokofiev now to turning our attention to a Walt Disney program and then the sounds of the holidays just a month away. And this is a kind of program that really is taxing on the orchestra. There's a lot of really difficult passage work in these Disney scores.
I'm guessing you're going to see quite a few little young ladies dressed up like the characters from Frozen.
It's amazing how popular that is, Dave. And now with the new movie coming out, I mean, they've been sitting on that for several years when the release date was for Frozen 2. And now that those trailers are out in the movie theaters, I think that's created or rekindled, I should say, that kind of ecstatic energy for Frozen. But boy, what a classic that film has become in such a short amount of time, and how well-loved all of those selections are. And so that's one of the new selections that Disney has added into this package to kind of bring it up to date to include modern movies.
Well, obviously, those little princesses are in school right now, but moms, grandmas, aunts, uncles, if you're listening and you have kids, they would love this concert. It's this Saturday night, Butler Intermediate High School Auditorium, Disney in Concert Around the World, live with the Butler Symphony Orchestra, the Butler County Symphony Orchestra. Okay, we'll talk a little bit more about that later, but I wanted to make sure that folks who might be just getting out of the car knew what was coming up. By the way, concert time 7:30, right?
7:30 with the normal pre-concert lecture at 6:30. And I'd like to talk a little bit about the composers who have worked on the Disney compositional staff, in addition to some of the major, really remarkable technological breakthroughs that Walt Disney himself and his company came through with animation. So that's at 6:30.
And ticket information, you can get it in person at the Symphony office. It's on the Diamond at downtown, or you can check online. They've got all their information there as well. And it's butlersymphony.org, I'm pretty sure, is the website. Yeah, butlersymphony.org. Okay, I want to talk a little bit more about this wonderful program where Matthew Kramer takes music and musicians, by the way, into the classroom, and he's done this for several years now, and this is the week that it's happening. But we want to take a quick break here, and we'll be back to talk more with Matthew Kramer. He's here in the studio with us. We'll return with more of It's Your Turn on this Tuesday, right after these words.
In 2019, Tri-River celebrates 25 years as your Butler neighbor, providing exceptional musculoskeletal care in the community.
Hi, I'm Dr. Tom Mazzanegro, known by many as Dr. Muzzy, and I'm an orthopedic hip and knee surgeon. Patients do best when they are engaged with the process, educated, and invested in their own well-being. At Tri-Rivers, the patient is at the center of everything we do.
To learn more or to schedule an appointment, visit TriRiversMSK.com or call 1-866. 866-874-7483.
The Battery Warehouse Plus family is proud to announce the opening of West End Tire and Service, formerly Seaman Tire Services. Keeping commerce alive in Butler is important, and at West End Tire and Service, they vow to keep the same great people and great service that Seaman's provided for years by offering a vast selection of tires, installation, and service. West End Tire and Service is looking forward to serving the community and expanding their service offerings in the near future. Stop by West End Tire and Service, 459 West Cunningham Street in Butler, or call 724-287-6973.
There's a pancake. If you heard me coming out of the break say flat as a pancake, I was talking about the topography of the wonderful state of Indiana, because that's your home state, Matthew Kramer. You're a native of the Hoosier. You're a Hoosier.
Huh? I am a Hoosier, yes. I went to Butler University there, and then at that point left for about 16 years and various stops along the way, and have found myself back in Indiana now.
Butler University, great basketball team there.
That's right, but the funny thing is that when I was in school, I was vaguely aware that we even had a basketball team. And it was, of course, that big run, two back-to-back national championship games that really brought a lot of attention to the university.
Actually, the entire state of Indiana is basketball crazy and has been for years. Folks, this is a little parenthetical, but if you've never seen the movie Hoosiers, it's a film about high school basketball, and it's one of the greatest sports films I've ever seen in my life.
It truly is, and Gene Hackman can do no wrong, in my opinion, that he's in.
Yeah, he was the coach, the rundown coach, beat-up coach. It's about a high school basketball team in this rinky-dink gym, and they won the state championship. It's just a great, great, great film. Well, anyway. That's another story. We could go on to Larry Bird and Indiana State and talk basketball forever about Indiana. Did you know early on that this was going to be your life's work, music? I mean, did you come from a musical family? Were you introduced to music early in life, Matthew?
I did not come from a musical family, and it was actually my oldest brother, 10 years older than me, came home one day with a violin and said, it's about time somebody in this family learns how to play a musical instrument, but I'm not going to do it. So he gave it to me, signed me up for some violin lessons, and my parents were just the best supporting musical parents that you could ask for, in the sense that they didn't know what was going on as far as, you know, the composers that I was playing or the exercises that I had to practice. But they took me to every lesson. They showed up for every recital. They they bought the instruments when it was time to upgrade. So they were just very, very supportive of my musical development, and in particular the years where I didn't want to do it. And there were quite a few of those years early on when I would much rather have been outside. But not a day goes by where I'm not grateful for the support that I got from my family, because I love where I am now with my life. I love what I do and who I work with, and the kind of, I don't know, interaction that I have with music is just a very important part of my life.
I think back on those childhood years, and I was blessed as well. Obviously, music is not my profession, but I was blessed. I'm from a very small town, very rural school district, and yet we had a great elementary music teacher, and he was peripatetic. He went from, Tuesday he'd be in one elementary school, Wednesday he'd be somewhere else in the district. He moved around. And how he put up with, little kids and the lack of attention span. His name was Charles Tridle, the late Charles Tridle. And he, every time there was a holiday, he would have us make up a song. He'd put write a staff on the blackboard, and we'd come up with words and lyrics. And then a little bit later, and I can still see Charlie Tridle doing this. He had, this was back in the day when records, vinyl, remember those folks, vinyl records? And he would introduce us to the instruments in an orchestra, and he would play something, and you had to identify what instrument it was, So you learned to distinguish between a trombone and a French horn.
That's marvelous.
And that sort of thing. And then later he played albums of the great musicals of the day, Rodgers and Hammerstein. So I would have had no introduction to any of that except for him. In a small rural school district, I was lucky.
That's superb. What a wonderful memory.
Yeah, good memories. So speaking of schools and learning about music, tell us a little bit about this program that you take to a number of school districts in Butler County every year. This is actually a curriculum that you yourself have written, right?
That's right. I have a very similar experience to share as yours, with a beautiful, beautiful memory of yours, is that I was this kid sitting in a concert with the Richmond Symphony Orchestra. I must have been in fifth or sixth grade, I think. I had just started playing violin, but I heard a full professional symphony orchestra for the very first time, and I was blown away. And it made an indelible impression on me, to say the least. I never would have known that this is what I would have ended up doing with my life, but I remember that like it was yesterday. I'd never heard anything like that before. I'd never been to an orchestra concert. And I walked away thinking that this was something that I'll never forget. And so now, you know, at the stage of my career, I've been a professional conductor for almost 18 years. I've done hundreds and hundreds of educational concerts all over the place. And every time I walk out, whether there are 100 kids in the audience or there are 1,000 kids in the audience, I always keep in mind that there's one or two children in the audience that might have that same experience that I did. They'll all be fascinated in some way or another with the instruments, and most of them like the shiny instruments like the tuba or the harp. But they'll be impressed by the sound that can come from a group of professional musicians. But some of them will really have an experience that is just transcendental, that'll really alter them in some way or another. And so, you know, for me, it remains one of these incredible experiences. It's a real honor to be able to share our music with young people and introduce them. And so these curriculums, it's become harder and harder to just play classical music and get kids out of class with everything that's going on in their studies, that we've really made a trend towards designing programs that kind of align with state curriculum standards. So, for example, this week's program is Peter and the Wolf, which everyone has had some experience with at some time or another. It's probably introduced the instruments of the orchestra more than any other piece of classical music. But we also aligned it with English language skills. We talk about how storytellers have to make numerous decisions at the beginning, middle, and end of their stories, and how the words they use are important, and the same for a composer, but they use notes instead of words. And so we go through this masterpiece, Peter and the Wolf, and we stop about 5 or 6 times along the way, and we talk about the choices, whether it's the instruments or the notes that they play, or how fast or slow, or the loud and soft, or the character in which they play. We just highlight these choices in storytelling. And I think it enables the kids to see that it's not so easy, that when you're telling a story or you're making up a story, that there are numerous stories, numerous decisions that have to be made along the way. And then, of course, they get to hear these great instruments playing these really memorable tunes. And we also have our narrator, the wonderful Phil Ball, is with us, who is using hand gestures for each character of the story at the very beginning. And what we notice is that about halfway through, the kids are doing it themselves every time they hear a specific melody, because they're using their listening skills and they're actively engaged. So we try to keep all of the kids, regardless of what age they are, engaged in the program and involved in some facet of it, one way or the other.
And unlike my childhood experience, wonderful though it may have been, instead of listening to these instruments on a scratchy old record, you've got live musicians from the Butler County Symphony and several of them who go to the schools.
We take a traveling nomadic troupe of 22 musicians from the north of the county. We were just up in Slippery Rock all morning today, and then we'll end up at the end of the week in the south of the county down in Mars. Obviously a stop here in Butler tomorrow. And so every year the schedule changes, you know, little by little, and we add groups, and some groups take a year off. But we do see thousands of kids, which is really what's fascinating. This program is offered to the school district at no cost, and our tireless board president, Patty Stagno, is working very, very hard to ensure that everything is coordinated succinctly so we can get in and out of schools with minimal delay and an interruption in their class schedule. But again, I just keep coming back to these smiling faces that you see and the finger pointing, look at that, it's a tuba or it's a French horn. It really is, since I'm around it so often, I have to kind of take a step back and just say, wow, these kids are probably having their very first experience hearing professional musicians play great music.
And it's an assembly type thing. They come to the auditorium or the all-purpose room or whatever at whatever school you're at.
Exactly. We're usually in the auditorium, in some cases a gymnasium, where the kids come down and sit on the floor and kind of wrap around the orchestra, which is also so engaging for us. But the first year we did this, we really did go into very, very small schools, into elementary schools, and we were setting up in cafeterias and lugging marimbas in and out the door. So we've really gotten very efficient at how we present these programs now, with the least amount of stress for all involved, so we can really just focus on the music making.
Hey, nothing wrong with a cafeteria. That's where I took my first music lesson, with the banging of silverware and everything else that was going on.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Better there than not doing it. I when I look at the program coming up for this Saturday evening's concert, Disney Around the World, I can't help but think of the late Walt Disney, who's been dead now for a long, long time. When he came up with this concept of Disneyland back in the late 40s, early 50s, he couldn't possibly have imagined that it would still be going strong decades later. And people, everybody in the world, you say Disney, they know what you're talking about.
That's absolutely right. I mean, talk about a vision for this entrepreneur, getting just a vision, absolute visionary. Yes, I mean, Disneyland, Disney World, all of the theme parks around the world, but the animation industry, and I've appreciated learning so much about him. I'm a real fan, and of course, with two young boys, Disney is in our house some way or another, whether it's these movies that are just on constant rotation day after day. But the real creativity and the technological breakthroughs, I was just reading about multi-plane cameras, how he used planes of glass with the animation and would move them in different directions to give you foreground and background effects. And this was, you know, really the mainstay of animation all the way up through The Little Mermaid, and then going to digital animation and computer animation after that. But Walt Disney, what I think many people do recognize, and they would in some way or another, that he loved music, because music has always played a huge role in these movies. And that's what you'll see in this program this weekend. We start with the Disney Classics Overture, which has great songs from Peter Pan, Sleeping Beauty, so many of the Mary Poppins, so many of the recognizable old classics, and then we move right on through. But you don't need to look any further than 1940s Fantasia. I mean, talk about a real burst of creativity there. Instead of having the music written to accompany the film, he took great classical works and created animation to them. And I don't know who could come up with the hippopotamus and a tutu and the prehistoric dinosaurs with the Rite of Spring. And, of course, the greatest classic is Mickey Mouse as the Sorcerer's Apprentice. That's just pure genius, if you ask me.
Now, did I hear you correctly earlier, and you said there'll be screens at the concert this Saturday night?
That's right. This is another one of the revamped portions of this program, is that there's always been animation with this particular concert. It's just that it wasn't always the best quality. They would have still images, for example. Now everything has gone to high definition, so on the left and the right of the orchestra there will be two large screens, and it's not, since each selection is just like the best songs from every movie, it doesn't really go in chronological order in some cases, but you'll see great portions of animation. Much of it is live action. Other cases, like with the Mary Poppins suite will play, they took a different path with that. They've actually just included storyboard art, which is what the graphic designers use to design costumes and sets. So that's kind of a look behind the scenes of the production process of Mary Poppins. But all of it is very visually appealing. Again, it just pops off the screen now that everything has been moved to high definition. And most of it is the animation, but in the case of Pirates of the Caribbean, that was a live-action movie, and we'll play the score to that as you see Jack Sparrow darting around off the pirate ships.
Storyboard. When I was a little kid, Walt Disney was still alive, and he had a program that was on Sunday evenings. It went by various names, Disney's World of Color or whatever. And similar to what you do, before every concert of the Butler County Symphony Orchestra, you have a pre-concert talk. He would do that at the beginning of his hour-long program. You know, you'd see Walt Disney for 2 or 3 minutes, and he'd be talking about this or that and the other thing. That's the first time I ever saw or heard the term storyboard, you know, mm-hmm. And he would explain how his cartoon features were drawn, how they got the ideas for them. Listen, we have to take one more break. We have a couple of more minutes. I want to wrap up with Matthew Kramer with us here in the studio today. We'll take a break, and we'll be back in just a moment. One of our sponsors on the program today is Butler Motor Tours. They've got a lot of trips for the coming holiday season. You realize how close we are to the holidays, right? November is like 3 days away. That means Thanksgiving, Christmas just around the corner. Here's an idea. How about a trip out east, stopping first at Bethlehem, PA, Christmas City, USA. Where do you think the name comes from for Bethlehem, PA? Yeah. You'll stop there for a while for some gaming. There's a big resort there. There's a casino there. And then on to New York City. As all decked out for the holidays, the Big Apple. You'll see a special show at Radio City Music Hall, the high-kicking Rockettes, and then back to Bethlehem and a stop at their gigantic Christkindle Market, modeled after the European Christmas markets that are so popular in the weeks before Christmas. It's a nice trip. It's a three-day trip, December 4th, 5th, and 6th. Check out the details online at butlerbus.com. You can get all the details there, the itinerary, the cost. You can book online if you want. Butler Motor Tours have been around for more than 75 years, taking folks from our area to places near and far. Again, online at butlerbus.com. Butlerbus.com. We'll be right back. The Spencer D. Geibel Funeral Home and Cremation Services, located at 140 Newcastle Road. It's about halfway up Newcastle Hill, just down from the State Police Barracks. This is the Butler area's newest funeral home, Spencer D. Geibel Funeral Home, the first and only value-designed funeral home, built specifically for that purpose. A funeral home that offers styles, types, and levels of service that others are not able or willing to offer. They can transfer all prearranged funeral services and policies as well. It's an entirely new idea. It's local, and there's a hometown gentleman running the operation, Spencer D. Geibel. Spencer D. Geibel Funeral Home and Cremation Services, 140 Newcastle Road in Butler. Not affiliated with any other funeral home.
Welcome your fall morning with the best fall breakfast at Michael's Restaurant. In the fall, mornings are chilly and you just don't want to get up. But head to Michael's Restaurant and savor their pumpkin pancakes, cornmeal mush, or their popular buckwheat pancakes. Breakfast lovers, it's worth getting out of bed for. I promise.
Matthew Kramer's with us here in the studio. He's the musical director and conductor of the Butler County Symphony Orchestra. We're talking about this Saturday's concert. It's the second of the new season, still relatively new season for the Butler County Symphony, Disney, and concert around the world. Ticket information at the Symphony office on the Diamond downtown or online at butlersymphony.org. Before you take a break of a few weeks, the annual holiday concert will be coming up just around the corner, too. That's in early December. I like the way you schedule that. Not right up, smack up against Christmas when everybody is too busy to breathe, but in early December when you're just kind of getting into the holiday season.
That's right. It really has become a mad rush for everybody. We just enjoy having the audience in attendance for a little bit of a holiday spirit before their mad rush begins. And for musicians, the entire Christmas holiday season is chaotic anyways, playing in one place and other church services. It can be kind of stressful if you don't manage your time, but we've always held on to that first weekend, and it's worked great for us.
Speaking of chaotic, I'm anxious to know what a conductor, a musical director, a longtime conductor, puts on at the end of a chaotic day. You come home, and your CD or your MP3 player or whatever you have, just this past weekend, a chaotic day, I got out Scheherazade by Rimsky-Korsakov, and that just relaxes me in a couple of minutes. I just feel very good about that, you know. And I keep it handy. What's something that you throw on at the end of a hard day?
Be honest with you, Dave. After a concert, I put SportsCenter on. Try to keep up with scores.
Scott Van Pelt.
Exactly. Just remove myself from the mental exhaustion of, you know, getting through 2-hour programs and you know, before it. I like to clear my mind out. But I do listen to jazz, and I do listen to long car rides over, usually about get 6 hours worth of music together. And it just always try to mix it up a little bit. I've got an eclectic taste. But after concerts, no, it's definitely something to decompress, and it usually involves a little basketball highlights, football highlights.
Good to know. And by the way, it's great with the technology we have today that you can mix whatever you like. It's not like in the olden days when
That's
you
right.
might like two songs on an album. You had to listen to all the rest of it just to get to those two songs. Good stuff. Matthew Kramer will be giving a pre-concert talk this Saturday night to give you a little bit of a hint about what you'll hear when the concert gets underway. Again, ticket information at the Symphony office on the Diamond downtown or online at butlersymphony.org. Program note, Penguin hockey tonight. Last night we had Steeler football here on WISR with Bill Hillgrove. Tonight, Mike Lang doing the live radio play-by-play here on WISR as the Pens host the Philly Flyers. Airtime 6:30. Matthew, good to see you. Nice to have you here today.
Great to be here with you, Dave.
I'm Dave Malarkey. Enjoy the rest of your day. We'll see you tomorrow, 12:30, for the Wednesday edition of It's Your Turn.
Thanks for joining us for today's edition of It's Your Turn with Dave Malarkey here on WISR 680 AM. Today's broadcast is also archived for you online at WISR680.com. Tune in again next time for Dave Malarkey's It's Your Turn, weekdays from 1230 to 130, right here on WISR 680.
Lonely, but without you, my love.